blinking against the spots that suddenly dotted his vision from the exploding fuel tanks, Dean reloaded the rifle, then dropped through the roof to the corridor floor. He felt good then, more certain that he and Lewis would find a means of escape. He returned to the room, pushing through the door. Lewis spun suddenly, more quickly than Dean would have thought possible. The gun in Lewis's hand threw out a foot-long muzzle flash. Dean jumped to one side of the doorway. The bullet barely missed him and smacked into the doorframe.
Shit, Lewis! Put that blaster down before you hurt somebody you're not supposed to!
What about the men behind us?
All chilled. My dad always told me to take advantage of a situation if I could. Those flamethrower tanks strapped to their backs like they were. Those bastards were just walking grins waiting to have their pins pulled. I pulled them.
I don't think I'm gonna make this one.
In the feeble light coming through the partially open door, Lewis's face was as pale as ivory, streaked with perspiration and blood, and his eyes were glassy.
You'll make it! We've come this far! I'm not gonna let you die on me now! Let me check out how bad you're hurt, though.
Dean's fingers worked the buckles of the boy's armored vest, becoming bloody almost at first touch. When the body armor opened up, he peered under the armor and saw that Lewis was right. The bullet that had hit him in the lower back had passed through his groin, then deflected off the body armor covering his crotch, and tore its way through his upper body as well.
Shitters! They shot you bad, Lewis. They shot you real bad.
Lewis toppled forward as if the bones had gone out of his legs. Blood leaked from his mouth below his sightless gaze. Dean tried to catch the boy, but the sudden loose weight was too much. Dean went down under Lewis's body.
Lewis! You can't die! You can't leave me here alone! Lewis!
He forced himself up off the floor and through the Browning, barely breathing as he watched the door.
Dean.
Something shimmered into being on his right. It was impossibly close, near enough to reach out and touch him. He'd have seen anyone or anything that had come that close to him. Then he saw the face, made out the features. She was indistinct, as if he were seeing her through a heavy fog.
Christy?
Your father is coming for you. Look for him.
In an eye blink, she was gone, just like some kind of ghost. Before Dean could puzzle over her appearance and what it meant, the door burst open. Framed in it was a nightmare figure that Dean remembered well. A giant, muty pig, its beady, merciless eyes nearly buried in wrinkles of scarred gristle, the wicked tusks curled up on either side of its mouth. The corridor Ryan turned onto was filled with fire. He had eluded his pursuers for the moment and was aware that the mirage was showing potential for burning down around his ears. The Sekhmen with the flamethrowers had been generous with their attentions, leaving burning areas and dead monkeys in their wake. The group at the bottom of the inferno hadn't been so lucky. Eyes stinging from the heat and the smoke, Ryan couldn't tell how many of them there were or what exactly had killed them. With the way, at least temporarily impassable, he turned back and took one of the other hallways that he'd passed up. When he was halfway down the new corridor, glancing to the sides to check the doors of what turned out to be more hotel rooms, he felt a chill gust through him and even thought he'd smelled Christy's scent next to him. He didn't look. If Christy was still alive, she was outside with the others. There were other men searching through the ruins of the Mirage as well. He'd seen them, and he'd seen one more dead boy in green. At the most, only five of them remained. Farther down the hallway, he found a door that had a short flight of stairs behind it. The brass plate on the door announced hotel staff only. The lock had been shot through. With the stair in his hands, his back and side pressing against the side of the stairwells for cover, he went up. His ears monitored all sounds. A slight whisper of movement came from the top of the stairs. At the landing, he paused, looking back the way he'd come, and wanting to make sure a retreat was still open to him. Satisfied no one was closing the gap behind him, he put his hand on the doorknob and turned. Inside the room, slashes of neon lights danced around carelessly. The wall to his left held only glass from top to bottom. A bed occupied a space to his right, tucked in beside a desk that held a computer. The broken mirror covering a big section of the wall on the other side reflected the furniture, making it look as if another room were just next door. He looked around, his senses at full peak. He stepped into the room then ducked under the attack of the winged monkey that had been clinging to the space between the door and the ceiling. Unable to get off a shot, he swung the stire and felt a meaty impact as he struck the monkey with the rifle's butt. The monkey scuttled under the bed. Drawing the Sig Sauer, Ryan touched off 3 rounds across the bed, trying to find the meaty creature. The monkey came out from under the bed in a rush. Its mouth was open, showing its deadly fangs, the black talons reaching for Ryan's throat.
Fire blast.
Ryan shoved the Sig Sauer into the monkey's face and pulled the trigger.
Ryan.
Ryan was moving, turning, lifting the Sig Sauer as he recognized the voice.
Christy, I thought they chewed you.
Ryan reached a hand out to the one she had extended. Instead of flesh, he felt a chill, similar to the one that had passed through him in the corridor down below.
I'm not really here, Hover.
Ryan's mind whirled with the multiple meanings of that simple declaration. His heart suddenly felt like stone, cold and as distant as her voice.
Dean's here with you. Find him.
Dean?
He shook his head, struggling with everything being dealt to him. Christy faded, winking out of existence like a dying star. The only thing that remained was the pull he was suddenly aware of inside his head.
Dean.
He walked over to the wall of glass. He peered through it with difficulty. Soot grimed it over, layers deep from the fires burning below. The main door held tropical plants Ryan recognized from the jump to Amazonia. They had overgrown boundaries previously established by the building's architects, and had even thrust branches and new growth through the wall. Once, it looked like a villa had been built inside the gaming room. Tables, chairs, and slot machines were toppled over, chaotic. Dead people littered the floor. Some of them were dressed in old-style clothing, while many of the others were much cruder dress. Set guards moved below as well, searching through the debris, shooting at the monkey still living. The pole didn't come from that direction, Ryan knew. He turned and went back down the stairs, getting more sure as he followed the sensation. He was determined not to lose the boy now. Not to the pit creatures, muties, or other chill squads. Not to the barons. Ryan fed the anger inside him, working it until the fatigue dropped away and his nerves and reflexes were as sharp as they ever were. Out in the second floor corridor, he turned, going farther into unexplored territory. The pull grew weaker. Realizing his mistake, Ryan turned and went in the other direction, the Sig Sauer in his fist. The pull in his mind led him around the corner where the fire had been. It still burned, flames licking almost to the ceiling where acoustic tiles smoldered. A dark shape shoved at one of the doors on the other side of the fire. Ryan squinted, peering through the heat wave given off by the flames, and recognized the shape as one of the wild pigs the companions had encountered before. There had been plenty of them in the pit. In the next second, the wild pig thrust its way through the door. Ryan took a few running steps and launched himself through the flames. Then in the next moment, he was through it, racing for the door as the pig disappeared into the room. Reaching the entrance, Ryan threw himself to one side of it, the Sig Sauer clutched firmly in both hands. Ryan peered around the door and watched as the pig bore down on a boy in green body armor sitting against the wall. Another boy, obviously dead, was at the feet of the first. The pig careened against the wall as the boy adroitly rolled out of the way. But the pig's shoulder brushed against him hard enough to knock him to the floor. Recovering immediately, pushing himself one-handed into a sitting position, the boy struck the blaster's muzzle into the pig's ear as the insane beast turned its head toward him. The pig shuddered, splayed out its legs, and collapsed. Ryan stepped part of the way around the doorway, knowing he was backlit by the flames in the corridor so that none of his face showed. The boy noticed him at once, lost in the darkness himself, and started to bring up his gun.
You make a move to pull that trigger, and I'm gonna chill you where you sit. Name's Ryan Carter. I'm looking for my son, Dean.
Ryan took up the slack on the Sig Sauer, knowing that the boy might be too fearful to even hear him.
Dad?
Keeping his grip on the Browning, Dean worked to shove the dead pig from his leg where it had him trapped.
Dad!
The dead weight slid away, and Dean pushed himself to his feet and ran toward his father with open arms. Ryan rushed forward and grabbed the boy in his arms.
Dean!
Dean hugged him back, stronger than Ryan had remembered. For the moment, this was the perfect place for both of them to be. Christy swam beneath the surface of the pond, trying not to leave a ripple in her wake, struggling not to imagine what might be in the water with them. Jack had her by the arm, and she had no choice but to trust his instinct for direction. The water was too murky to see through. Just when she thought her lungs were going to burst, her hand encountered thick mud that felt greasy and cold. Jack guided her to the surface.
Breathe easy. Hard not breathing fast. You got to. Otherwise, we'd get chilled.
Christy turned her head, taking in her surroundings. Jack had brought them up in a nest of reeds and cattails. Some of them were broken off, stabbing uncomfortably into her neck and chin. At least she hoped it was broken stems and not an insect or water creature. The pond was big, deep, and cold, nestled into land that had been burned at some point. One side of it still held chunks of pavement from a street, a stop sign, and the rusted remains of a once colorfully painted trash container.
Be still. They watch for us.
Christy froze into position, noting the horses and their riders winding through the trees. All of the men had guns. Only a few of them carried bullseye lanterns, shining light across the surface of the pond and turning it almost mirror bright.
What does the thermographic sight show?
Nothing. Bunch of water. What'd you expect?
What about the mirage?
Hard to say. Lower two stories are pretty much blazing. That much heat, hard to get any kind of reading at all. There's a possibility they made it to the mirage.
Maybe. Let's stick it out here and see if we can turn up anything in the water. Beats the hell out of going up there and getting your nuts toasted.
Christy slowly freed her .38 from the soaked leather holster and set herself to move.
Wait, I go first. I chill silent. When the shit hits the fan, then you move.
Okay.
Jack reached into the shallow water and lifted up a fistful of black mud, which he smeared over his face, through his hair, then over his arms. When he finished, he was no longer as pale as milk. He looked like a black, wild-haired demon sprung whole from the night's shadows. He crept out of the water, staying just outside the tall reeds and cattails. In less than a dozen steps, he disappeared soundlessly from Christy's sight. The riders split into two groups and went around the pond in both directions. The group to Christy's left would reach her first. She kept the .38 in her hand, certain her skin was turning blue enough to match the water. Her sentient hair clung to her head. Less than 2 minutes later, one of the riders directed his horse into the water and threw the cattails toward where Christy was hiding. His mount didn't like stepping through the mud and the water. Christy held her gun, waiting, her heart thumping.
Hey, Lloyd! What the hell's wrong with you? Lloyd!
The man in front of Christy halted his horse and looked back over his shoulder, less than 10 feet from her position.
You want to stop shouting like that?
Behind the horseman, a rider suddenly toppled to the ground.
Hey, somebody chill Harris and Lloyd. Both of them are laying on the ground over there with knives through their throats.
I see him!
Coming up out of the water, just as the man in front of her tried to bring his mount around, Christy grabbed the bridle. The horse reared up in fear, its eyes rolling white.
Whoa!
Unprepared, the rider fell into the muddy water. Christy shot the man twice in the back of the head before he could get to his feet. Christy kept hold of the bridle and ran along at the animal's side, leading it from the water, waiting for an opportunity to get into the saddle. The horse also served as a temporary shield, blocking sight of her from most of the other riders. Up on the bank, her feet under her more solidly, while never breaking stride, she reached up for the pommel.
Shh! Whoa!
She cut it in a tight half circle, searching the shadows for Jack. He came up off the ground with no warning. One of the two horses that had belonged to the men he'd killed was tied to a tree, stamping its feet and fighting the bit in its mouth. Racing across the ground, Jack approached the tethered horse from behind. Before it knew he was there, the albino placed his hands against the horse's rump and bolted into the saddle. Bullets cut through branches and leaves above his head as he reached forward, staying low against the horse's neck, and yanked the reins free. He brought the animal around and kicked it lightly.
Yeah.
The other horse streaked for the trees, heading in a westerly direction that would take it toward the mirage. Another horse was also free, galloping in the same direction.
Get horses!
Christy nodded, pulling her mount's head around.
Yeah!
Bullets whizzed around Christy as gunfire split the night. Glancing ahead and to the right, she could see flames coming from the first and second floors of the mirage. Behind them, the surviving SET team members were already putting a posse together. Cutting around a tree, Christy halted her mount for a moment and looked back. Jack rode low in the saddle and fired his .357 at the men less than 40 yards behind him. Christy raised the .38 and thumped back the hammer. The distance from herself to the first rider was less than 70 yards. She centered the muzzle over the man's chest. The lead rider slapped a hand to a spot where his throat joined his chest, then fell from the saddle. Thumbing the hammer back again, Christy lined up her second shot and emptied another saddle. Jack was almost on top of her when she fired her remaining round. The bullet went inches wide of its target. Christy kicked her horse back into motion, barely taking a lead over her companion. Seven men still remained in pursuit. Christy swung the cylinder of the .38 open and dumped the brass. Fishing shells from her shirt pocket, she tried to refill the cylinder and guide her horse as well. It took eight bullets to finally reload the weapon because she dropped three of them. Jack was having the same problem. Abruptly, a shadow moved ahead of Christy. The horse noticed it before she did, sidestepping fast enough to almost throw her from the saddle. She pointed her pistol at the shadow, then saw that it wore JB's beloved fedora and steel-rimmed glasses.
JB!
Keep riding! Mildred and I'll take care of the posse!
Okay!
Billy, I'll take the odd ones. Leaves you the even ones.
JB stood in the shelter of a blue spruce, a stiff needle scratching at his face as he raised his Uzi. Mildred nodded. She held the checked target pistol balanced in both hands.
I got them.
Wandel and Tyler were farther back in the brush, set up to cover their retreat if any of the riders survived the ambush. JB timed his move, stepping out when he knew the pursuing set men were all between the narrow defile leading through the brush. The first rider didn't have a chance to register JB's appearance before the armorer caressed the Uzi's trigger and sent a three-round burst into his face. The man's head came apart instantly, and he vanished under the hooves of the horses behind him. Mildred remained in the brush, firing between the branches. The next four riders dropped from their frightened mounts in quick succession. Mildred worked to get the sixth rider, managing a hard shot uphill as the man took off in that direction. The lone surviving rider retreated behind a row of trees, heading back to the area around the pond. A line of 9mm bullets from the Uzi tore bark from the trees that he took cover behind.
Gather up the horses that you can. I'll be back.
Be careful.
JB reached out with quick hands and grabbed the pommel of the first horse and hauled himself into the saddle.
Yeah.
He raced his horse along the trail. Through the brush, he saw a rider trying to make it to a clearing. The sec man glanced at JB through the forest, eyes going big with fear. They came out into the clearing at the same time. JB lifted the Uzi one-handed, guiding the horse with the reins in the other. Less than 20 yards remained between them when the armorer cut loose. The 9mm round smashed the sec man out of his saddle, the riderless horse streaking past. JB went after it, catching the animal's reins in seconds and wrapping them around the pommel. Through the trees and along the skyline in the distance, he saw the headlights of Wags rolling through the pit toward the mirage.
Dark night. Yeah!
Reining his mount to the side, he kicked its ribs, making it and the captured horse gallop back toward Mildred. When he reached the spot where he left Mildred and the two surviving members of the red team, he saw that Jack and Christy had returned as well. Between them, they'd captured nine of the horses. Wandel and Thompson were pulling themselves into the saddles. Mildred saw his face and immediately knew something was wrong.
What is it?
Wags are coming. Fast. And plenty of them.
Ryan moved silently, with Dean at his heels. The boy showed more coordination and patience than Ryan could remember from past times. They walked along the corridors of the first floor, trying to find a way out of the mirage. Coming around the corner, opening onto the area by the front desk, Ryan saw dozens of big-toothed fish lying dead in the pools of water across the floor. One of the dead boys was there as well, staring up at the black ceiling. Farther back, near the line of foliage that had swept into the entranceway from the atrium, three sec guards stood over two boys wearing the green armored vests. The sec guards made no move to harm them, but they kept their rifles ready in their hands. The boys knelt on the floor, their hands tucked behind their backs.
Where's the rest of your team?
Dunno. Probably dead, like everyone else.
How many are dead?
All of them are dead.
How many do you know rightly for a fat boy?
Six. Six for certain. Fish got one of them. Five others were killed by those damn monkeys.
Hate those fucking monkeys.
Not seeing anyone else around, Ryan lifted the Sig Sauer and shot a sec man through the side of the head. Before the first man had time to drop, Ryan shifted his aim and put three rounds into the second man's head. And two in the third. The two boys in green body armor tried to go for the dropped weapons.
No. Not until we reach an understanding about what's happening here.
The boys froze. Dean came forward out of the shadows. Perry's features were disheveled and bloodstained, carrying a multitude of scratches.
You know these boys, Dean?
Yeah. Ethan Perry and Connor. Don't remember his last name right now, if I ever knew it.
Who the hell is this?
My dad.
You come here to get Dean out?
Didn't start out that way, but I'm aiming to see it done.
What about us?
If you can keep up, you can come along. If you don't carry your weight, you get left behind. Arm yourselves. We're pulling up stakes, now.
Ryan strode toward the atrium, seeing the dark outline of the entranceway framed behind the trees and plants. Dean stayed close behind him, and the other two boys fell in as well. Connor tugged on Dean's sleeve.
Lewis?
Dead.
Oh.
Senses alert for any sign of danger, Ryan came to a halt at the entranceway and peered around its edge. He saw the wags heading toward the mirage, almost obscured in the white smoke drifting off the burning building.
Fire blast.
He signaled to the boys and took off around the corner of the building, watchful of the snipers along the top of the wall on the other side. He skirted the edge of the outside swimming pool, counting on the fall streaming from the fifth floor to help cover them from easy view. He wondered where Mildred and JV had gone. Ryan turned west and watched a group of riders approach at a fast gallop, staying under the canopy of trees as much as possible. Then, under a bright shaft of moonlight, he spotted red hair on the rider of the lead horse. Christy brought the horse to a stop at the edge of the swimming pool, her eyes focused on Ryan, guided more than by just her vision.
Time to shake the dust of this place from us, lover.
Bullets from the guards on top of the wall suddenly sheared through the trees over the riders and horses. JB swung up a rifle he'd liberated from someone along the way. The armorer cracked off expert shots, dropping two of the segment from the top of the wall. The rest of the sec guards went into hiding as Jack, Mildred, Christy, Wandle, and Thompson added their fire to JB's.
Okay, boys, go.
Without a word, Dean dove into the water and began to swim briskly, followed by Connor and Perry. Holstering the Sig Sauer and pulling up the Steyr, Ryan picked off two snipers, further demoralizing the sec crew overhead. He raced after the boys and dove into the water, staying under for a time to cut through it more swiftly. When he surfaced, Ryan was barely two strokes behind Dean and ahead of the two other boys. He reached the bank at the same time Dean did, then took the reins Christy offered and swung up into the saddle.
Good to see you again. After seeing you when I was in the Mirage, I wasn't counting on it.
I know. Wasn't sure I'd be here myself.
Puzzled by her words, but knowing he didn't have the time to investigate them further, Ryan reached out briefly to touch her hand. Her fingers twined with his, strong, sure, and permanent. Ryan smiled at her.
Which way is out?
West. There's a wall there separating the pit from the old convention center. It has an underground garage.
What about the wall?
Christy pulled out two remote-controlled detonators.
Remember that old story about the walls of Jericho? Well, I've got a couple of Gabriel's horns here.
Ryan grinned. He glanced over to see the boys all on horseback and the rest of his people grinning as well.
Let's get the hell out of here.
One hand filled with the Sig Sauer, Ryan kicked his horse into a gallop. The others quickly followed. They stayed within the trees as much as they could, taking advantage of the cover offered. With the rough terrain, the wags were struggling to close the distance, not able to gain much on the horses. The horses, however, were only flesh and blood. All of them were sweat-flecked from their exertions, looking as if they'd been dipped in soapy water. As the group took a final sweep through the remaining forest, Wandle cut a round in the side of his head that dumped him from his saddle. The others didn't slow their mounts for an instant. If the man wasn't dead, he was certainly too wounded to keep up with them. Jack reached out and captured the riderless horse's reins.
That carries a horse now.
Another moment through the treacherous forest and uncertain footing of the terrain, and they were at the edge of the brush in front of the wall. There was also a phalanx of sec men bunched together on top of the wall.
Fire blast. We ride out into that, we're gonna get seriously chopped up.
Maybe not. Could be those sec men have picked the wrong place to be. Jack and I didn't just mind the wall.
Better do what you have to do. Those wags are getting closer.
Christy slid her thumb over the red detonator button, then pressed it. Doc's attention was focused primarily on the sudden and definite increase in shots cracking from the SecMen stations above him. He didn't hear Burnson come up behind him until it was too late. Only the slight scuff of a shoe against concrete alerted him. He spun. The scientist held a chunk of stone in either hand, turning both his arms into hammers. He swung the rock in his right hand. Pain exploded along Doc's jawline. As he went backward against the wall beside him, stars swam into the old man's vision.
You're a fool! You're going to die a fool! And I'm not going to die with you! With your background, you know you shouldn't let emotion get involved in your work!
Burnson swung the chunk of stone in the other hand, intending to smash Doc's skull. Doc dodged, and the rock smacked into the wall, shattering and scarring the cinder blocks.
I must insist, Doctor, that you control yourself. Otherwise, I fear your choice of actions will lead only to ill fortune.
White spittle framed Burnson's mouth, and madness gleamed in his eyes. He swung again, this time succeeding in knocking the Lama from Doc's grip.
The only ill fortune will be yours for ever thinking you could hold me here against my will!
Senses still reeling, Doc dodged another blow and slid the sword stick from his belt. He twisted the lion's head and drew the concealed sword. Before Burnson could avoid it, the tip of the steel blade flicked out and slit his throat from ear to ear. Crimson sprayed from Burnson's mouth and the slash across his throat.
I will not be dissuaded from my post, nor do I accept being killed while at it. May God have mercy on your soul.
Burnson toppled forward, the light going out of his eyes.
By the three Kennedys!
Doc whirled toward the section of wall that he expected to go flying. Instead, a barrage of broken rock collapsed from the ceiling. He braced himself against the wall behind him, wondering if the stories above him might suddenly collapse and come crashing down on him, reducing him to a protein paste. Hayden Lamar watched as the center of the wall of the convention center blew apart. The explosives that ripped it to shreds were cunningly placed. The rooftop was ripped loose, then fell back in on itself, taking a 30-foot section with it, as well as the sec guards trying to snipe the one-eyed man and his companions.
Son of a bitch!
Nearby, Vinge Conrad held his rifle in hand, his eyes wild and hot.
Is someone inside the convention center? Devil take all of you! I want a team down there now who can report the truth to me!
Lamarck didn't figure anyone was inside the convention center. Whoever had entered the pit had minded on their way in. Getting rid of the sec teams on top made sense, but he didn't know why the one-eyed man had returned to this site with his companions. There was no way out. He peered through the scope, searching for his quarry. For a moment, he thought he might have spotted the one-eyed man among the trees. His fingers slid around the sniper rifle's trigger.
Hayden.
Yes, Bernhard Koe.
Do you see them?
Not clearly, sir, but I'm hoping for a shot.
Good man. Maybe I can flush them out for you.
Hardco set his Amelie 82 machine gun on the fence line and settled in behind it.
Dawson, Hughes, you people are with me. Now move your asses!
Out of his peripheral vision, Lamarck watched Conrad grab a home-built grenade launcher along with a small bag of bombs, slinging both over his shoulder.
You can stay up here if you want, Hardco, but I'm going down to ground level and fuck those bastards over royally. You can sort through the pieces later.
You got men down there, too.
Then maybe we both lose. Maybe we'll do the big game over in the next few weeks, or maybe Giscard just gets lucky this year. Either way, those skanks die in the next handful of minutes. You can bet your ass on that.
Conrad led his men down the metal staircase that had been welded together to reach the ground. Lamarck looked back through his scope, sorting out the blacks and the greens until he found part of a face. Memory told him that the fedora and steel-rimmed glasses belonged to one of the men among One Eye's group. He let out his breath and steadied for the shot, as Hardco's machine gun howled in unrestrained carnage. Peering over the edge, Lamarck saw the bottom of the convention center come spewing out.
Shit! Secondary explosive!
Glancing back up, he saw the line of riders gallop out of the trees. He turned and raced to the stairs Conrad and his sec crew had taken. Ryan fought his horse as the Plasex went off in the building, showering the trees with concrete chips and debris. Watching the wall fronting the underground garage, he saw the hole take shape, yawning open to a mouth of darkness almost 12 yards across and nearly as tall.
Ryan!
Christie led the way, with Ryan waiting to be rear guard. Bullets hit the ground in front of him and on both sides, striking sparks off rocks. The snipers on top of the wall were getting their nerve and the range back. Ryan stayed low over the saddle and the horse's neck as he passed through the hole. His eye had problems adjusting to the darkness in the underbelly of the convention center. On the other side of the garage, Jack had stopped the extra horse for Doc. The old man appeared shaken up, but whole. Jack had to assist him in getting a boot into the stirrup, then reached down and grabbed Doc's waistband, helping pull him into the saddle. Christie navigated the stairway leading to the upper floors. Mildred was behind her, trailed by Tyler, Connor, Perry, and Dean. Coming up behind Doc, Ryan looked down and saw Burnson's body nearly buried in refuse that had tumbled from the ceiling. The man's throat was cut, clots of crimson covering the front of his shirt.
What happened to him?
He suggested very strongly that I be remiss in my friendship. I corrected his oversight.
Ryan slapped Doc's mount on the flank and got it moving. Doc guided it up the stairs, the horse's breath blowing out in steamy clouds as it clopped up the steps. Glancing up the hole made by the Plasex, JB and Ryan spotted the Sekwags racing closer.
They might get them in here if they're lucky, but even if they get them through that maze of wrecked wags, there's no way they're going to get them up these stairs.
Ryan nodded, glancing up. Jack was already navigating the landing.
Maybe some waiting outside.
They had wags outside. I took the coil wires. Got time. We make the miles.
Following JB, Ryan urged his horse up the stairs. At the top of the stairs, JB passed through, and it opened up onto the main lobby. Swirling dust from the explosion filled the lobby. A sniper's bullet hit Ryan's horse. He wheeled his mount to the right and felt it stumble for a moment under him as he spotted three men firing from entranceways across the foyer. Over half the horses were already out the door. Ryan glimpsed the night sky beyond, filled with bright, dazzling stars. Ryan lifted the 6-hour and squeezed off rounds. Bullets plucked at his clothing, one of them burning a furrow across his temple above his left ear. He put the sights of the 6-hour over the lantern on the wall by the man on the right. He watched the lantern come apart, drenching the set man in oil. The burning wick fell more slowly, but when it touched the man, it wreathed him in flames. Ryan shot the next man in the head, then emptied the 6-hour's magazine, hitting the last man in the chest and the throat, knocking him down.
Ryan, let's go!
JB held the door for him. Ryan kicked his mount into a tottering run to the outside. It was immediately cooler outside. In the moonlight, Ryan could see the blood dripping from his horse's nostrils. It was dying beneath him. Ryan slid off the poor beast as it slowly collapsed. JB reached down and helped pull Ryan up into the saddle behind him. Ryan took the empty magazine from the 6-hour and rammed a fresh one home, thumbing the slide release so it snapped closed.
No time to make for the wags.
Then we make do with the horses. Get out as far as we can. Maybe we can find a way to lose ourselves. They may be regrouping, but it looks like they're starting to fight among themselves as well. Look up there.
Across the top of the wall, some of the Sekmen had turned their fire on one another. One man fell from the side and crashed against the ground less than 3 yards away. JB's horse spooked. Wrestling with the reins, JB headed the animal in the right direction. Before he could kick the horse in the sides to get it going, an open-topped wag raced around the side of the convention center, throwing out rooster tails of dust and rock behind it. Ryan squinted to make out the men inside it. The only one he recognized was Vinge Conrad. As Ryan watched, Conrad raised a tube to his shoulder and flipped up the sights. There was no way the horses could outrun the wag, and with the homemade rocket launcher, Conrad only had to get close to kill them all.
JB, you get going. I'll cover the back trail.
Ryan slid from the saddle and smacked the horse on the rump, setting it racing off before JB could voice an objection. As the wag closed to 25 yards, Ryan opened up with the 6-hour, firing as rapidly as he could. Most of the rounds scored on the vehicle, and he managed to get the guy manning the heavy machine gun mounted on the rear deck. Just as Conrad turned the rocket launcher on him, Ryan shot the driver through the head. The wag swerved hard to the right, just as Conrad loosed a rocket, sending the missile streaking into the convention center. Conrad dropped the launcher and grabbed for the wheel. He yanked hard, and the wag swerved back. Ryan dove out of the way. He rolled and came up to his feet, already hunting for his target. He lifted the 6-hour and fired, taking out the two back tires of the wag. Out of control, the vehicle smashed against the bole of an ancient oak tree, gouging the bark. For a moment, Ryan thought Conrad might be dead as well. Then the Baron surged up from the passenger seat and got out. He spun to face Ryan, his hand clawing for his weapon.
You fucking son of a bitch!
The only thing he touched was an empty holster.
Looks like you lose the whole game this time. I guess I'll be talking about the Four Barons from now on.
Fuck you!
Conrad reached into the back of the wag, yanked out a machete, and then charged at Ryan. Lifting the 6-hour, Ryan squeezed the trigger, then noticed that the slide had blown back empty. When he'd been shooting at the wag, he'd used up the magazine and hadn't realized it.
Bullets for your blaster if you're gonna kill me with it, stoop! I'm gonna make you into twins!
Tripping the slide release, Ryan closed the empty weapon and shoved it into his holster. Just as the Baron swung the machete with both hands, Ryan cleared leather with a panga and parried the Baron's blade. Conrad closed on him, trying to use his greater weight to an advantage.
I'm gonna break you, little man, but I'm not gonna kill you. For that, I'm gonna use a slow fire. Cut a piece of you off at a time and let you watch that piece burn. Then we'll move on to the next piece. Death's gonna be a long time in coming.
No way in hell.
Ryan whipped his free hand up, punching Conrad's unprotected chin. The Baron shoved back, getting more distance between himself and his opponent. The big man swung the machete again, slashing for Ryan's neck. Ryan ducked under the blade and kicked at Conrad's knee, shattering it. Even hurting as he was, Conrad swung the machete again. Sweeping his left arm up to block the Baron's weapon arm, Ryan rammed the Pongus point into the underside of the bigger man's jaw. The blade slid home easily, gliding through flesh until it was stopped by the back of Conrad's skull. The Baron collapsed as life left him. The machete fell from his dead fingers. Ryan yanked his weapon free. He turned around and found himself confronted by Hayden Lamarck. The sec boss had his rifle leveled, standing less than 20 feet away.
I hadn't counted on you killing Conrad. That's gonna create problems, unless I shoot you myself and bring you in. Maybe then the other barons will believe Hardco didn't have anything to do with Conrad's assassination.
Man come out here looking for trouble. I didn't go looking for it. Seems like you come out here hunting it too.
You see all that fighting going on?
Yeah.
You caused that. You and your friends. Thrown everything that was balanced between the barons into a frenzy. Gonna be a lot of chilling before things settle down again.
With Conrad dead, Hardco should have an easier time of claiming the Vills.
Maybe. Be easier to do if I chill you here and take your body back.
Be difficult to drag a man when you're dead yourself.
Looking over Lamarck's shoulder, Ryan saw JB in the shadows, his shotgun raised to his shoulder. Lamarck didn't move the rifle sights from Ryan's head.
If you thought for sure you could have taken me without getting your friend chilled, you'd have already done it.
True enough, but I got a better than average chance. Shotgun's loaded with 20 razor-edged flechettes. The impact of them shredding flesh from bone is gonna stagger you some.
But will it be enough?
I guess that remains to be seen, doesn't it? One thing's for certain. We can't hang around here to think about it much.
Agreed. I get myself chilled. I figure Hardco's gonna have an even harder time hanging on to the Seven Vills. How do you want to handle this?
Start walking back toward the wag. You can keep the rifle on me. Before you get behind it, you throw out the rifle, and my friend takes your head off with a shotgun. Sound fair enough?
Fair enough. But I'd rather see you dead. Don't want to have to get sleepless at night wondering when you're going to be coming back our way.
Revenge isn't all that high on my list. I see a chance to get it, walk away clean, I'll do it. I'm more interested in a whole skin. Cut my losses here. But I'll tell you one thing. If I see you anywhere around me again, I'll chill you on the spot. No questions asked, no warning given.
I'll keep that in mind.
Lamarck started to back up, reaching the corner of the wrecked wag.
Far enough. Throw out the rifle.
After only a moment of hesitation, the sec boss tossed the rifle down and moved swiftly behind the wag. As Ryan ran toward JB, he rammed a fresh magazine into the Sig Sauer, then pointed it at Lamarck's position.
Okay, I've got him covered.
JB lowered his gun and turned to go get his horse. Lamarck moved at once, coming up over the edge of the wag with a gun in his fist. Ryan fired, scattering bullets all around the sec boss and sending the man to cover again. JB kicked a foot out of his stirrup. Ryan stepped onto it and heaved himself up behind JB in the saddle as the armorer turned the horse's head and kicked it into a gallop into the night. Remains of Vegas's former glory still thrust above the trees and grass around and behind the wag, letting Ryan know that they hadn't yet cleared the area where the Vill had once stood. Most of the buildings were smaller now, mainly private dwellings and scaled-down shops. Less than 200 yards farther on, with the horse finally weakening beneath their combined weight, Ryan saw the clearing up ahead, where an armor wag sat like a mythical beast, its ugly cannon snout pointed toward the ruins of the Vill. Saddles and bridles littered the ground in front of the armor wag. JB pulled the exhausted horse up short.
What the hell?
Ryan slid down, holstering the Sig Sauer so he could take up the Steyr. Abruptly, the armor wag's hatch opened, and a man pushed himself into view. Ryan recognized the weathered features of Jake, one of Nicholas Brody's chief sec men. He touched the brim of his hat.
Carter, you know me?
I know you. I just don't know what you're doing here.
Brody sent me for the missing boys. Took me a while to round up some able-bodied men and come running, but we're here now. Dean told me him, Connor, and Perry are all that's left. Don't reckon Mr. Brody's going to be overly fond of hearing that.
Probably not.
I got the rest of your people aboard this wag and others. I'm offering you a ride back to the school if you want. Don't figure on anybody back there bothering us too much if we come outfitted like this.
I'd say you're right.
Days later, rested from sleeping in beds for two nights and their wounds cleaned and tended, Ryan and Christy sat at one of the patio tables, sharing a breakfast that had been made in the Nicholas Brody school. There were melons and hash browns, fresh-cured bacon and breakfast steak, eggs any way a person wanted them, warm biscuits, and coffee that was real coffee. During their stay, Ryan had found the headmaster to be reclusive, grieving over his failure to protect his charges. Even with the deaths of seven children hanging over the school, evidenced by the flag in the center courtyard flying at half-mast and the black armbands on the student body and teachers, the situation Nicholas Brody had created with his dream seemed idyllic. Farther down the hill, Mildred and JB stood side by side in a field, getting the companion's weapons travel-ready again. Doc had spent some time lecturing in a few of the science classes, much to the chagrin and irritation of the teachers, and Ryan figured the old man was there now, talking elegantly of how important knowledge was. Jack spent his time in the woods with Jake, tracking down venison and other meats for the school's larder. Ryan took Christy's hand in his.
I figure on moving out tomorrow morning.
This is a nice place. Maybe we could spend a few more days here.
But it's not our place. Me, Jack, and JB, we fly in the face of everything Brody's trying to teach these young people. Dad sits down at the table with us, and they know it. You and Mildred and Doc, you're not so far gone that you can't fit in with these surroundings. They look at us, they know we're one step out of the grave.
I know. What about Dean? Is he going with us?
Ryan glanced back toward the picnic area where Dean and Phaedra Lemon sat at one of the wooden tables.
I'll have to ask him.
He seems to be quite smitten with Phaedra.
She's a cute girl. Seems to like him, too.
I'd say so. Wouldn't it have been nice if we could have met like that? Shared some of our innocence a while?
I don't remember ever being innocent. And if we had met, maybe we wouldn't have cared at all for each other. It's the travels we've had this far that's brought us together and kept us that way.
Gaia's will that it'll always be so. My heart has never been bound to anyone the way it has been to you, Ryan Cawdor.
Ryan tried to say something appropriate, but the words refused to find their way into his head. Christy touched his lips with her fingers.
I know what's in your heart. It's enough for me.
Leaning forward, Ryan kissed her. When they parted, he glanced at Dean and saw that his son was getting kissed by Phaedra.
Like father, like son.
A few hours later, Ryan caught his son alone. The boy was standing on the catwalk around the inner palisade wall, a piece of straw between his teeth, as he gazed out over the land spread before him.
Mind if I come up?
I can come down.
I'd rather come up if you don't mind. Been inside these walls all day. Be good to look out some.
Okay.
Ryan scaled the ladder easily and clambered up beside his son.
See anything you like?
Everything. I haven't gotten out much in the time I've been here. Field trips occasionally, campouts overnight even less. Still not used to having walls around me all the time.
Ryan grinned and tousled his son's hair.
I know how you feel.
He stood beside Dean and looked out over the world, feeling the wanderlust calling to him, making him want to roll on to see what he could see.
We're clearing out of here tomorrow morning.
I thought it would be sooner.
If we hadn't been through everything like we were, it might have been sooner. Gotta ask you what you want to do, though.
What do you mean?
I talked it over with Brody. He says you're welcome to stay here if you want. Instead of kicking you out of school for prowling, he's willing to work out some other punishment that'll allow you to stay in your classes, if you'd rather.
Good to know.
He says you're a good student, showing some real potential.
I've been studying hard.
I know that too.
What if I asked to come with you?
Then you'd have to have all your gear packed to be ready to move out at daybreak.
It took a moment for the words to penetrate. Then a broad smile lit Dean's face.
You mean it?
Yeah.
I didn't do the whole year.
You did enough for now. You want to come back later? We'll see about that, too. I just thought right now it might be difficult for you to leave with Phaedra hanging around and such.
No. She knows, Dad. She told me that I'd be leaving soon as I could. Said she could see it in my eyes. Went on to tell me that I'm not a domesticated bird. I'm born to the wild. But that doesn't mean I can't come see her if I get back this way.
Sometimes a woman knows a man's heart more than he knows it himself, son. A man gets too used to living by his wits, and stopping to feel things slows that down.
I guess so. You mind if I go tell Phaedra?
Go ahead. Dean grabbed the sides of the ladder and wrapped his feet around them, creating just enough friction to let himself slide safely down it. When he hit the ground, he took off running.
Dean, one other thing.
The boy turned around, eyes full of mischief and a big grin on his face.
What's that, Dad?
When I get up in the morning, I don't want to hear about you being caught on top of the dorm in the middle of the night again.
Don't worry about that. Nobody's gonna catch me.
Ryan turned away quickly, before his son could see him, grinning like a fool. He saw Christy out in the vegetable gardens, going through plants and vines with students, her hair flame red in the bright sunlight. He thought about her and him, and how things might be if they had a place of their own. Christy would love the children they had, bring them up in gardens like the one out there, be content in a small house. Ryan couldn't see it happening anytime soon, but the thought was pleasant enough. After a few more minutes, he went down to join Christy, to share in one more peaceful afternoon before they once again took up their journey through Deathlands.
Deathlands Mars Arena is a graphic audio production. Deathlands and all characters are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 1997, Worldwide Library. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Terrence Hazelford, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Andy Clements, Michael Glenn, Dolores King-Williams, Joe Brack, James Lewis, Tim Getman, Jeff Baker, Dylan Lynch, Mort Shelby, Tony Nam, Thomas Penny, Jonathan Watkins, Kate Torrey, Kate Foster, Elliot Dash, Ken Jackson, Sonny Lasky, and Jason Stiles. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Ken Jackson. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Chris Rowan and Temeskin Wubna. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan, Temeskin Wubna, and Johan Detweiler. Adapted for graphic audio by Cheryl Hayes. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Temeskin Wubna and Matt Webb. If you enjoyed Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
I'm Kyle Rayner, commonly known as Green Lantern, and there's a story that goes with that.
What am I supposed to do?
Wear the ring.
For how long?
Until you die, or something worse happens to you.
Flip, flip, flip! Hey, that kid is shooting at me!
I'm here as a representative of the Justice League.
You've got like a club.
Something like that.
You screwed up badly tonight.
You remember the signaling device we gave you?
Where'd you find it?
On the floor.
I intend to know if you're responsible for the disappearance of the satellite.
Why do you think I might be?
You could be smarter than you seem.
Well, I'm not.
I was called Ganthet.
You're a 500,000 years old?
If my brothers succeed, there will never have been life on Earth.
It's up to us to prevent the end of the universe?
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Justice League of America Green Lantern Heroes Quest.
If we do not do it, it will not be done.
Copyright 2009, DC Comics. All rights reserved. Justice League of America, Green Lantern, and all related characters and elements are trademarks of DC Comics.
What is it?
Raiders, sir.
This is Captain Lund. Who are you and what the hell do you think you're doing?
Taking your ship, sir, in the name of Sacred Liberty and the New Tex Militia.
You can't do this. You won't get away with it.
Not a single shred of decency, but what can you expect of that sort?
Abomination.
What perversions have they bred into her?
Slut!
They will destroy you. They will come after me and blow you to bits.
Someday your luck will run out.
Someday you'll be helpless.
Someday you'll be stuck.
And what will you do then?
You are thinking still that you will be rescued, but you have already spoken the last words you will ever speak.
Never.
We'll need the slicer, boys.
Welcome to the real world.
Serrano Legacy, Book 5, Rules of Engagement, Part 1. Available now from Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.